FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's February 5th, 2018. Well, we saw a tremendous stock market sell-off last Friday, and the amount the Dow was down, maybe it's indicative of something. It was 666. you know, better take out your crucifixes now and, you know, some holy water and a silver crucifix with some silver bullets. Perhaps. I don't know. You could get a little crazed with the superstition and the symbolism involved, but there's no accidents in the world of finance, and there's no accidents in the world of politics. Well, where is Bitcoin going? Did you know that it's like down around $7,500? I was going to say the ounce, but you don't measure Bitcoin in ounces. You measure Bitcoin in coins. It's at a major low. We predicted this was going to happen because bubbles, you know, men will live and die, but the bubble is forever, and no surprises there. Hey, but let's see where it goes from this point. It's a fascinating thing to watch. You should be watching it. Even if you're not invested in it, just watch it because it's amazing. 73.59.31. That's where Bitcoin's at right now. Well, markets, are they ready to collapse? Is the long-awaited correction slash bear market upon us? We did have 9 years running up. Hey, first, as always, email us at kl@kerrylutz.com to be part of the show. Well, where are we heading? Markets, where are we heading as far as precious metals? And, well, to find out, to get some light shed on the subject, I've got back with us again, Mark O'Byrne, Research Director of Goldcore. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Kerry. Thanks for having me on again.
Hey, so looking at the markets, you know, it's rather significant. That was a major sell-off last Friday of stocks, and you can't be too surprised. We haven't seen a sell-off like that in quite a while, though. You think about how many of you out there are in the market and have never lived through a real bear market before. All those kids who got involved, Mark, after 2009, don't know what a correction is, don't know what a bear market is, and they are calling the shots.
Indeed, yeah, there's a lot of neophytes in the market, and only recently I read that was TD Waterhouse, I think it was, they reported that they had record retail investors opening up accounts with them recently, you know. So I think, and there's talk that some of the millennials are beginning to think, it's that FOMO thing, fear of missing out, you know, and they hear some of them are piling into the cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin, obviously, and then other of them are beginning to pile into the stock market at or near the top. You know, obviously these markets could go higher, we could have a correction and then go higher, or we could have hit the top. I mean, it was quite a significant correction as you said last week, and so who knows. Momentum is a powerful thing, and there's so much liquidity sloshing around the system now that we could see a correction then march on to higher prices later in the year. Very difficult to say, but I think one way or the other, the bottom line is these markets are very overvalued and stretched indeed, and bear little relationship to the fundamentals of the U.S. economy, or indeed most economies in the Western world.
Okay, so right now, as we speak, it's 11:13 a.m. Eastern time, and the market's only down 42 points. Could this be an indication that the much heralded Plunge Protection Team, or PPT, is busy at work shoring up the markets for the next rally?
That's quite possible, yeah. Yeah, the Working Group and Financial Markets, aka the PPT, they sort of, you know, they work in the shadows, so to speak, and it's quite clandestine, whatever interventions they do. And but they intervene in the markets, you know. We just don't know when they're doing it, and I wouldn't be surprised if there is official intervention. And I think even looking at the European bond markets today, when I looked at this morning, I was surprised that there hadn't been, given the degree of that the sell-off in bond markets last week, and also the big focus is on the US 10-year and how that's gone up to, I think it was up above 2.7%. So the concern was get a big sell-off in stock markets, and then the European economies, and you know, your Italy's and your Spain and Greece and Ireland and all these economies and their bond markets are particularly vulnerable. But today they were strangely calm, and I think whether it's the working group of financial markets or the ECB's plunge protection team and Super Mario with his bazooka, I think someone may have been in there very, very active in buying some of these the so-called pigs, unfortunately named pigs, P-I-P-I-I-G-S, their bonds, which were strangely flat on the day, you know. So it'll be interesting to see. I think I haven't looked at it since this morning. It'll be interesting to have a look now how they close at the end of the day.
Hey, so, you know, when we talked last time, we talked about escalating debt. The debt never goes down or stabilizes. It can't go down, because when it does, then we have a major financial disruption. Some might call it a panic. Others might call it a depression. So they're kind of locked in here. There's nothing else they can do. It's inflate or die. And I don't see where that's changed over the past 9 years. Do you, Mark?
No, absolutely. And the debt just keeps going higher and higher. And the global debt to GDP ratio is now, it's over 320%. And it's just, I think it's like 230, 240 trillion. And it's just increasing at a fierce rate of knots. And what's happening now is when you look at the long-term charts of the GDP to debt ratios for most economies in the Western world, and indeed on the global basis, you would see that for every dollar, shall we say, increase in debt, there would be a greater increase in the GDP growth. And that was the case for most of the 20th century. But more recently, we're seeing that the GDP ratio, if you look at it on a chart, the GDP ratio is sort of, it's flattening out, if you will. It's like rolling over the top of a hill. Meanwhile, the debt is just going parabolic, you know, it's scaling this cliff edge, you know. So one is going parabolic up, the other one is flattening out. And basically for every dollar of debt that's being created in the world today, there is less GDP, there is less buying of goods and services in our respective economies, you know. And that very much speaks to what you're saying there, you know. And it is a form of a Ponzi, you know. I'm hesitant to use that term because obviously it's not a classic Ponzi in the classic sense of a Ponzi, but there is elements of a Ponzi in the modern, both in the financial system and obviously in debt-based monetary system as well.
Yeah. Well, Ponzi, you know, it's got a specific meaning to it, if you will. And one of the meanings is that basically the early investors finance these huge returns that then get paid off by the later investors. There is no real appreciation taking place. There is no real market occurring. Yeah. Here, yeah, it's only a Ponzi scheme in the most figurative ways. So it's a good analogy, but it doesn't really totally apply.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you could say the markets, they're in Ponzi scheme territory in effect. I mean, alluded to the, you know, where to be Charles Schwab or TD Waterhouse and the little guys, retail guys are opening up accounts in a big way again. But the smart money again, I think I saw recently as well, corporate insiders, the you know, the C-suite and the executives and some of these guys are beginning to sell, you know, and they've been buying a lot in recent years, particularly in the form of stock buybacks. So I think that the smarter money realizes, you know, they've had a good run of it and you know, they understand the importance of diversification and rebalancing portfolios, you know. When you've had a run like this, it's, you know, it is time to rebalance. And I think the smart money it's reducing allocations to stocks and particularly to bonds, and I think they're beginning to allocate to precious metals and particularly to gold. And you're seeing that in a lot of the data, particularly in terms of the ETF holdings and the reported increase in the holdings in the various ETFs internationally.
So here's the question for you, Mark. Are precious metals the ultimate insurance policy for what's going on there, for over-leveraged debt markets, over-leveraged financial markets, and lack of economic underpinning for the advance of those markets?
Yes, is a short answer to that. And I would say that, wouldn't I? My business, Goldcorp, we are bullion brokers. We buy and sell gold and silver coins and bars, and we deliver them to our clients, and we store them in some of the safest vaults internationally. So I would say that. But you have to look at the data and the research and all the reams of evidence and the experience of people throughout history. That gold, 5,000 years, it's been used as a form of money and as a store of value. In throughout most of history, and more recently, there's a lot of academic research and indeed independent research from the likes of the asset allocation experts in the world, so Mercer and Ibbotson and these large companies that do research on behalf of large pension funds and institutional funds. All the research shows that gold is a safe haven asset, it's a store of value, and it ultimately that's been seen. It's been seen throughout history, and again, it was seen obviously during the financial crisis when gold went up. When everything else fell, in particularly during the 2008 to 2011 period, and then consequently, when everything else recovered and began to rise in value, and gold fell. So it is that classic hedge. It is that classic safe haven. And there was a lot of talk. Obviously, I think we're going to come to the cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. I mean, I've had heated discussions with people on Twitter about Bitcoin, and I do see the merits of it. And I actually own a small amount of Bitcoin. So I'm not anti Bitcoin in any way or anti technology, but I have long seen it as something that has huge potential and potentially could be very valuable in the world we live in today in terms of the very vulnerable fiat monetary system we have and the very vulnerable banking system that we have. That's what why Bitcoin has huge potential. But for them and for people in that industry to suggest continuously that Bitcoin is digital gold was, for me, always it was a step too far. And they said it's a store of value, and I said, how can you say something that is 9 years old is a store of value? So it could, in time, it could become a store of value, and I hope it does, because it is wonderful technology, but it's just too, and there's a lot of forces ranged against it, so it's too early to say that, but it's interesting, and you alluded to it. I mean, we've had a 60% fall, and who knows, but I think Bitcoin itself will probably survive and do well, but I think 95 to 99% of these cryptocurrencies and ICOs will probably go to zero. We're going to see massive creative destruction in this space.
Eight. So when I just talking about cryptocurrencies, four articles came up recently. Number one was actually a academic study by a couple of guys who examined the Bitcoin rise during the time of the right up to the Mt. Gox collapse. That was a Bitcoin exchange. If you're not familiar with it, it fell.
Oh, I am. Yeah.
It fell
at the time.
Right. It fell prey to fraud and collapsed. Stolen. I don't know. It's hard to know exactly what happened there. 600,000 Bitcoins valued at 188 million were fraudulently acquired. And Bitcoin during that time period went from 150 per coin to 1,000. And then it fell back, eventually hitting as low as 200. Then there was another article, major banks ban buying Bitcoin with your credit card. So you're not going to be able to just go buy Bitcoin and charge it. You're going to have to transfer money someplace to an exchange, whatever. And then the New York Times had an article, worries grow that the price of Bitcoin is being propped up, which is probably true. I felt that these things were manipulated anyway. But nonetheless, what they're talking about is this cryptocurrency called Tether. And whenever anybody used that cryptocurrency to buy others, whenever anybody would dump money into it, large sums, price of Bitcoin would go up. So, and there was an exchange called Bitfinex. And, this was quite obvious that this was occurring because things just don't grow to the sky. But I think it's very interesting now that these four stories, and they've replicated all over the place, the story about major banks, thousands of sites all over. And then there was one about the crypto conference that I went to in Miami. Backlash. The backlash after holding networking event at Miami Strip Club. Hey, I didn't even see the strippers. Okay, I was there. We had dinner on the roof, and we hung out for a couple minutes, and then we left. But evidently, the place was a strip club, and I said to my friend who I was there with, I said, it's not appropriate. You have a lot of women here. They're probably not into strip clubs as a whole and not appropriate, but evidently I was the only one that felt that way until this thing came up. But well, my point here is, looks to me like it's an orchestrated takedown of Bitcoin. You got all these bad stories coming up all at once.
Yeah, well, it could well be the case. And, you know, Jamie Dimon, who's not a friend of free markets in any way, and long believed that people in the gold and the silver space believe that JP Morgan have been at the vanguard of manipulating both the gold and silver price. And obviously he came out and went as far as to say that Bitcoin was a fraud, which was absolutely wrong, you know, and subsequently he actually had to retract that, you know. But I think they do see it as a threat. Some of them see it as a threat. Some of them see it as they see it as a threat, but they're trying to almost co-opt it in some way, and they're looking at Ripple and they're looking at, you know, other opportunities in the blockchain space. So yeah, there definitely seems to be a bit of a backlash, and I don't know how coordinated it is, but there definitely is a backlash, and that could potentially push prices lower, and so it's going to be interesting to see. It's interesting what you said about the, you know, it went from, I think it was, it went to 1,000 back down to 200. So if that was an 80% correction, then potentially we could see the same thing again, you know. And I think obviously people were thinking that there might be support at the 50% retracement, which is quite typical in bull markets, and that would have been 20,000 to 10,000. The fact that we've fallen through the 8,000 level, I think that was another level of support, suggests it could go lower again, you know. So, there's a lot of variables there, and it's hard to know, you know, because there are a lot of powerful interests out there who are, you know, very, very against Bitcoin, you know, and so it's just important to be aware of that, and not, you know, some of the guys in the space are so, it reminds me actually of the people in the gold and silver space that, you know, they get so convinced of their own argument, and the price is going to go to the roof, and the fundamentals are there, and the supply is going to overtake demand, and it's guaranteed. It's like, you know, and people thought that in 2011 with gold and silver, and look what happened. We had a multi-year bear market, you know, so who knows, the same thing could happen. I don't think it will happen with Bitcoin. I think it will, as I said, I think most of these cryptocurrencies go to zero, but we just don't know, that there are so many variables, and sentiment is a hugely powerful thing. And if some of the new entrants coming into the marketplace get very, very nervous about what they've just seen, then it will prevent the adoption that these guys are hoping to see, and that will prevent the demand that they saw materializing, you know, because a lot of what they talk about is about the amount of iPhones in the world, the amount of internet users in the world, and if only 0.1% of these people start using Bitcoin, the price will go through the roof. But these 0.1% of these people may never use Bitcoin, because they may just get very nervous by the degree of volatility that we've seen, you know.
Yeah, who wouldn't be nervous, Mark? I mean, you can't really use the thing to buy stuff. Yeah, there are credit card links, but I believe they'll stop them.
That's right. They're talking about doing that. Yeah.
They're not going to allow you to have your Bitcoin linked. And then the other thing is that when you look at the volatility, nobody's going to use their Bitcoin. Maybe now they'll be attempting to, but nobody's going to use their Bitcoin to buy anything, because it might go up 50% next month, right?
Exactly. Well, that's it. It was becoming, initially they hoped it would be a means of exchange. Then the argument changed, and it's not a means of exchange, it's a store of value. But it was never sort of, who knows, in time it may become, but, you know, you need 20, 30, 50 years. You'd need a track record through world wars and through financial crises, and, you know, for it to be genuinely tested. And I think the biggest threat is actually, you know, on the electronic side and on the internet side. I mean, you know, governments around the world shut down the internet in various countries around the world, you know, and that can be done, you know, and then your cryptocurrency isn't much good to you, you know. So there are significant threats to it. I think it will survive. I think it will, but no guarantees. And who knows? It could be something, you know, better. State-backed crypto. Obviously, the Bank of England and the Bank of Sweden and some of these central banks are talking about bringing out their own cryptocurrencies, you know. Mm-hmm. So right now it's a speculative asset, and that's what it is. And it's a shame, because we know the technology is wonderful, and it could have been a means of exchange if the original vision of the founding fathers in 2009 and that white paper came to pass, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon, you know.
Yeah,
certainly not with Bitcoin. Anyway, possibly with some of the other coins. Obviously, there's hopes for Litecoin and some of the other coins in that regard.
But they've all gone up with Bitcoin. And I think it's a question of together they go up and together they fall. And we're not sure what's going to happen next, but it's going to be volatile. And I think it's something you're better off trading, but you got to stay on top of it like white on rice. You can't trade this, walk away from your workstation for an hour and come back. You could be bankrupt. So we're just going to have to
say. You don't have stop loss orders, and you don't have any of those risk management techniques that you can use, you know, so it makes it difficult from a trading perspective.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately it's funny what you say about they're all correlated, and I think that's true. And in time, hopefully that won't be the case. Hopefully, we will see creative destruction, and the good cryptocurrencies with real technology, real applications will survive, and the rest will disappear, and it will create a much healthier sort of ecosystem. And ultimately, we have a lot of people approaching us about what we do and asking us, they want to partner with us and put gold on the blockchain. And we're looking at it, and I think ultimately, if someone can crack that nut of gold-backed crypto or silver-backed cryptocurrency, I think it would be very attractive indeed. And it should not be correlated with the rest of the cryptocurrencies, you would think. So, but we're trying to figure out how best to do it, and we don't want to. It can be hugely distracting. And then the next conversation is, well, even if you have it on the blockchain, do people really want to? As you said before, do they want to use it to buy their groceries or to buy their pay their rent or, to use it? They don't. Most of my clients just want to put it in the vault and have it gather dust and know that they can go and collect it and they can have it take delivery at any time. But they're using it as a store of value. They're using it as financial insurance. Yes. They don't really want it on the blockchain, to tell you the truth. It's like, to them, it's like, well, why would I add this component of digital risk, in effect, when I can just have it owned in one of the safest vaults in the world, in one of the safest jurisdictions in the world. So, so it's a funny one. You're trying to figure out again. It sounds great, but will people really want their gold on the blockchain? Maybe they will. If I think they will in time. But it's going to be interesting how it evolves. And the Royal Mint in the UK is looking at it, the Royal Canadian Mint. There's a lot of big players in our industry who are looking at it. I think even the LBMA are talking about it now. But at the end of the day, I don't think they're true blockchain peer-to-peer solutions these people are working on. I think they're more, it's their own. Their own database, in effect. It's not a true blockchain, not a true crypto bullion currency that these guys would be bringing about,
Very well possible. And I think it's still a little too soon to know, but you're probably right about that. But the blockchain, in terms of actually knowing that your gold is there, I think really has the ability to really make a difference here and to really stop the fraud. And I think with the blockchain, ETFs and closed-end funds are going to be quite pointless.
I agree. Already, the smart money realizes the risks in particularly in ETFs, in terms of you're an unsecured creditor on a trust, in effect, with a huge amount of counterparty risk with custodians and sub-custodians, banks, many of which could go bankrupt in another financial crisis, So if you can disintermediate that and take away all these counterparties and allow people to, as you said, to own gold on the blockchain and they have the record of ownership, then I think that would be quite powerful. It actually compares to what we do in that we allow people to own gold in the vaults. They have outright legal title to the bullion. They have a direct relationship with the vault provider. And we have it set up, unlike most of our competitors, whereby if something happens to our company and a client cannot get us on the phones or cannot get us, cannot log on to their portal, cannot get liquidity, cannot buy or sell, it doesn't matter. They can go directly to the vault provider, Loomis or Brinks, and they can say, I cannot contact Goldcorp. I have 100 1 ounce gold eagles in the vault and I want to sell them and I can't get Goldcorp. What do I do? And Loomis or Brinks will say, right, well, you can sell them to XYZ provider or you can buy from XYZ provider or we can ship it to you or you can come and collect it. So, and we've consciously set it up that way because we believe ultimately people don't want counterparty risk, So why allow yourself then to be exposed to any counterparty, including the bullion dealer or the digital gold platform, material. So we're sort of doing that in a non-electronic, non-blockchain manner, you know. So yeah, I think you're right. If it can be done, and it's done with safe counterparties who genuinely have the interests of the customer at heart, and there is integrity there, then potentially I think it will be very, very valuable and very interesting indeed.
Yeah, well, that's off a ways, but I think it's coming to us shortly, faster than you're going to think. Possible. Anyway, yeah. Hey, people want to find out more about you, Mark, more about Goldcore. What do you do?
Yeah, so the website's goldcore.com. We do a lot of research. We do a daily update, a weekly update. We do monthly podcasts. So we put out a lot of, we believe, unfortunately, the mainstream media doesn't cover gold as well as they should. And so we place a lot of value and importance on education. So yeah, people can sign up for the updates and that. We're all over social media and the usual places there. And I can be contacted personally through Twitter and LinkedIn and the various social media. And we specialize, as I said, just on owning gold and silver in the safest ways possible, both insured delivery and also owning bullion in the safest vaults in the world.
Excellent. Well, we will have a link to your site in the show notes of this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. While you're there, hey, sign up for our newsletter. Got one going out today talking about, well, you'll find out when you get it. And don't forget, the Twitter feed's at Kerry Lutz. Join the show, participate, email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. And the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Mark, thanks so much for coming on again. Been a pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.